Liverpool are so well on top now. Quansah. Bruno Fernandes, it's a mistake from Gerald Quansah, and Bruno Fernandes has beaten Kelleher. It's a magnificent finish. He got it just right. Well, the whole context, the feel of the day has just taken a seismic shift.
Welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Jan, you've been on this podcast a long time, haven't you?
I have. Is this where I get sacked, Graham?
I'm so glad to see you, actually. I've been meaning to have this discussion with you for a long time.
Thanks for staying on afterwards, Jan.
No, not at all, not at all. That can wait till the end of the season. Anyway, what I was going to say to you is this. You first appeared on this podcast back in September of 2012. Before that, I haven't always been the host of this podcast, have I? Before me, it was Chris Oakley, wasn't it? And
he did
the first three and a bit seasons of this podcast, because we've been going a hell of a long time. And we are one of the few fully independent podcasts that's been going since the last time Bayern Munich didn't win the Bundesliga. So it's pretty momentous that we've actually been able to go through that whole long period of time where they've just picked up silverware after silverware after silverware, boringly winning every title year in, year out. When you started, Dortmund were the champions of Germany.
Mm.
They won the title in April on, well, I can get the exact date for you, 21st of April, 2012. That was the last time a team that wasn't Bayern won the title. At the end of every season since then, you've been on this podcast when Bayern have been picking up the old dish. That's a long time, isn't it?
It's a very long time. I mean, I remember Terry describing the Bundesliga as being Bayern Munich and then everybody else. And, you know, I follow the Bundesliga because it's homework and I have to. not as closely as Terry, of course, as well. But, I mean, from a neutral point of view, it's great to see that that monopoly's been broken. I mean, Bayern may not even finish second, which is crazy. It's good to see that the monotony has finally been, well, hopefully it's been broken because you know, football being football. But this, it kind of reminds me of, do you remember when Leicester were on a charge and it was quite clear they were going to win the league? And it was, I don't know, maybe about the same amount of time between the end of the season and now. And we were still going, it's still not going to happen. It still can't happen, can it? And of course it did. So I don't know whether it's unfair to compare Leverkusen to Leicester, but certainly it's a seismic change and a very welcome one, I would suggest.
Yeah, it is. Well, come on, Terry, you are the de facto German football expert on this podcast. It's not the only reason you're here, but it's useful that you know this sort of stuff, because a lot of other podcasts will be talking about this. But of course, they won't have an actual German football podcaster on there. They'll just go to someone else who is looking at the table and saying, oh yeah, Leverkusen have had a good season, haven't they? So come on then. This is seismic, isn't it? Because they have dominated German football for decades, really. Now, last season they came close to losing it. But for my money, Dortmund didn't look like they were going to win the title. They were carried by one player almost. Jude Bellingham carried them there. I'm sure you'll correct me on that. But for me, they looked like the only team that were likely to challenge Bayern for the title. When really, what it really took was a side that had its shit together, like Leverkusen have had this season, and actually strolled away with the title. Okay, I will caveat this. They have not won the title yet. They just need one more win from their last six games. So yeah, it's not happened yet. But yes, this weekend, they will win the title. They will lift the trophy, won't they?
So last season, I think Dortmund were actually very good. They lost out on the title by a whisker. but they dropped off towards the end. They dropped some points in key games. They were a bit unlucky, but they dropped some points in key games and left themselves into the point where they needed that win against Mainz, which, of course, they did not get. But it is also true to say that Bayern were helping Dortmund as much as possible to get over the line and did not deserve to win the title. They won it by default. And really, if all things being equal, then they would have done. If Xabi Alonso had perhaps taken over Leverkusen maybe at the beginning of the season rather than sort of like halfway through, then it might have actually been a three-way title. But I think that a lot of Leverkusen's story has been the successful new players that they have brought in, specifically Granit Xhaka from Arsenal, Jonas Hofmann, who not many people, I think, talk about, but has had a terrific season from Mönchengladbach. And although he's been injured for a lot of it, Victor Boniface, particularly in the first half of the season, really gave them an awful lot. And they are still unbeaten. The question is now, will Bayer Leverkusen win the title or will they have an invincible season? I think the actual question is, will they have an invincible season? Because, you know, and bearing in mind they're in the cup final as well, and they're still in the Europa League, and they just have to find their way past West Ham. Last season, if Dortmund had won, it would have really, I think, that the asterisk would have been, well, you know, there'd have been an asterisk. It's like, well, actually, Bayern were a bit shit. This season, Bayern have still been a bit shit, a little bit shitter, if we're being honest with you. But Leverkusen have been brilliant. I mean, it hasn't happened yet. But six games to go, what we do know is six games to go and they are still unbeaten this season. That is, by any definition, a fantastic barnstormer of a football season in any league at any time. So, you know, if they don't win the league, it will be funny, but it will also be tragic and funny. Mostly funny.
Mostly funny.
But also tragic because it's Leverkusen. So, you know.
If they have an invincible season, this is something that Bayern have never done. They've never had an invincible season. The closest they've got is twice only lost one game in a season. Both times, who did they lose to, Terry?
Bayer Leverkusen.
Yes, indeed. At home as well. The only games they lost in those seasons were Bayer Leverkusen. And do you know, the last time they finished third, who did they finish third? Who finished second that season?
Bayer Leverkusen.
This could be the thing that really comes out of it. This Bayer Leverkusen finally becoming Bayern Munich's official bogey team.
Absolutely. And also finally getting rid of the Leverkusen tag, replacing it with the Neverlusen, conceivably. And obviously the Bundesliga going from a farmer's league to a big farmer's league.
Very nice. Very, very, very nice. Yeah, you heard that here first, listeners, okay? Right, okay.
Certainly did. No one else has done it. I've checked.
Yeah, yeah. Anyone else is saying that, right? You've got to get on to them and say, excuse me, that's the sound of football gag, that is. Yeah, yeah, it's the sound of football gag. It's not a Terry gag. It's the sound of football gag. All his gags that appear on this podcast are ours, okay? Not his.
But when it happens, and if they do go through an unbeaten season, there's no excuse for Bayern Munich fans or anyone else to sort of like go, oh, yeah, well, you know, Bayern were rubbish this season. And no, there's no arguing with that. Even if they win the next game and then lose the remaining games, that's still a legendary season. And yeah, they enter the final of the DFB Pokal. They will play second division Kaiserslautern.
Uh-huh.
So they will probably win that game. They'll have to work hard to lose that game. Fantastic to see Kaiserslautern, proper Traditionsverein, back in the big time in the German Cup, a famous name that's fallen on hard times. But with the best will in the world, something's going to have to go very wrong for them to lose to that, especially if Leverkusen win at the weekend and claim the trophy, because then they can go, right, we can focus on the cups, lads, because we've got the league. So let's win the double. And then maybe see if they can pick up an unlikely treble as well, although winning the Europa League will be tough.
Well, Jan, they're up against West Ham, so it's pretty much a bye to the semi-final, isn't it?
You would think so. You would say, actually, we spoke to a West Ham fan the other day, and amongst all the grunts and snorts, it was quite clear that he wasn't looking forward to playing Leverkusen. As Terry said, they're unbeaten, and West Ham can be a bit West Hammy, can't they? That's a really, really tough draw for them.
Yeah, some decent Italian clubs aside, it's written in the stars for that competition to finish up with a Liverpool-Leverkusen final, isn't it, really? That's the narrative. That's the one everyone wants. It won't be that, because that's what everyone wants. But to have Klopp versus the guy who's meant to be replacing him but won't be, is going to be the final, isn't it?
Yeah, I think there's a very good chance of that actually happening. And I think it's a very good chance that Leverkusen would win it. And it's like, you're fine. I'm fine. I'll just stay here with my trophies. And it could be a big hangover next season with Leverkusen, obviously. But let's not worry about that. These are legendary days. But it would be hilarious for a club that is world famous for blowing big moments like this to then perhaps win everything that they can win this season would be truly amazing. Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to not be pleased, but I am managing to not be pleased.
Incredible, though, because it's Alonso's first full season in charge. Isn't it? He took over midway past last season. And just digest on what you've said there, he could effectively finish the season with three major trophies.
Yes.
Which is incredible.
Yeah.
So that is even more, I mean, to go back to my point about comparing them to Leicester, that's even more seismic than Leicester's win in the Premier League, to go from being a Leverkusen to winning three major trophies.
Yeah, I suppose. I think it is always worth bearing in mind that Leverkusen have always been boosted by the money that they receive from the Bayer Corporation. And as such, they've always been a somewhat inflated position. But they rarely have they really ever looked like a team that could win a title apart from on those odd seasons when they have competed but have fallen short. But most of the time, and certainly I'd say in the last decade, they've looked quite some way away. And what they can do is that they're patient squad builders and they've got good recruitment lines and they've got a great setup. They've got an enviable setup there. And what they do is that they spend their money wisely, of course. And this, of course, is the key thing. There are richer clubs than Bayer Leverkusen. It's just that if they were left to their own devices and they were like not funded by Bayer, they would be a kind of grey mouse, lower mid-table Bundesliga at best with the money that they make. And that's why it rankles, I think, a lot with a lot of German fans, is that they would say, oh, we support, you know, clubs that are bigger support than them and where are we? But then, you know, you could also say like, well, yeah, but also your clubs are poorly run, like Schalke, like, you know, Schalke fans saying, oh, you know, no, we should be up there. I said, well, no, you were up there. And then you'd like got like a bunch of mad people to run your club and now you're down where you are. And Kaiserslautern as well, big club, massive support, huge amounts of history. They went all the way down to the fourth tier because they were just like poorly run. So, you know, you've got to give it to Leverkusen. They have run that club really, really well. And they've arrived at a coach at the right time and it's just all coalesced and they're going to make the most out of it. In what, at the very least, they will win one trophy, I'm sure. And they'll probably win two.
Yeah, interesting to see the difference in the Bundesliga between the last time a team that wasn't Bayern won it and now with all those big names now in the second tier and clubs still being badly run. That's not a dig at 50 plus one, because obviously a lot of that is not to do with that, but they've invited people in to fund clubs and it's not working out. Look at Hertha Berlin, for instance.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the 777 group, yeah, of course, who are on the verge of taking over Everton.
Yes. Oh, yes.
And like Hertha are now a second division club. 777 also owners of Standard Liège, who for some time did not pay their players, so somehow those guys are going to get through the fit and proper persons test and end up at that. So, yeah, even with 50 plus one, you're not always protected from people who are just rubbish at doing their jobs. And it does go to show what a difference it makes. I mean, look at where Bayern are now. I mean, they've had Uli Hoeneß and Karl-Heinz Rummenigge take a step backwards from the club and they give it to Oli Kahn for a couple of seasons. And when they end up where they are currently, and they're now dealing with that. Uli Hoeneß has had to come out of retirement and try and work things out. And it could be a while before they're back up the top again. It all depends on what happens next season. But really, you know, in many and other ways, maybe this really means is that if you've got a team that's dominating your league, just chuck a couple of Spurs players their way. That'll sort them out.
I'm hoping that worked because obviously Arsenal, my club, are playing Bayern Munich this week in the Champions League. So come on, Terry, are we actually going to finally beat them this time?
In all seriousness, over two legs, I think that is going to be a tough ask. But I expected Bayern to bounce back against Heidenheim, who are an objectively poor side. I mean, you know, they're a bit like Luton, not in the way that they play football, not in the slightest way, but in that they are a small club that is taking the Bundesliga as though it was a cup final and they're making a good fist of it. But there's no way they should have won that game, especially from 2-0 down. So something's wrong in that dressing room, clearly. They've kind of lost the plot, those guys. It's fallen apart. But the Champions League, you would like to think that from a mentality point of view, they'll say, this is the one, lads. This is the one that we need. And that will make them difficult. But just watch Heidenheim against them and just do that. You know, just get Frank Schmidt in as a consultant for that game. You know, they are vulnerable. They've got vulnerabilities at the back. I mean, like the two centre-backs, Kim and Upamecano. Kim was brilliant at Napoli last season and has struggled this season. Upamecano, I think it would be unfair to say that he's struggled since he's joined, but I'm not certain he's ever reached his imperialist best than he was when he was at Leipzig, when he was possibly one of the best centre-backs in the world. No exaggeration. So, yeah, it is gone a little bit weird. I think it's because they still don't really have a kind of really good defensive midfielder to sit in front of them and just help them out a bit. Leon Goretzka, I don't think, is quite as good as he was. Joshua Kimmich is a deep-lying midfielder rather than a defensive midfielder in my book. And I think that that's caused them problems. But they're definitely areas for exploitation. And I think that those Arsenal forwards would have a right old time against it. But I also think that Harry Kane will have a right old time against the Arse. So it'll be a game of goals.
A game of goals. There you go. Two games of goals that we've got to look
forward to. Two games of goals.
That everyone else can look forward to while I can just be hid behind the sofa until it's all over.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I'm going to get the popcorn out and say, yay, no skin in this one. Yay.
Yay. Yes, yes.
It's fun, whatever happens here. Schadenfreude all round. I'm going to get some Schadenfreude over my popcorn. Sprinkled Schadenfreude.
Jan, do you want to join in with the Schadenfreude popcorn? It's a mixture of salty and sweet.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that game. I think that Arsenal will win over the two legs. It's a great time to play Bayern. I mean, well, you could argue the opposite, of course, because, you know, if they're a wounded beast, it becomes slightly more dangerous, doesn't it? But I think Arsenal have got, I mean, so much quality that I think they'll overcome Bayern.
Okay, so who do you think's going to win the title then, if you're such an expert on Arsenal and all this?
Well, I wouldn't say I was an expert on Arsenal. I'm comparing one football team, Arsenal, who are very, very good, and another one, Bayern Munich, who are not having the best of times. I mean, it is just counting, isn't it? But who do I think is going to win the title? Well, I was looking at the run-in earlier, and I think City have got a run-in that they can easily deal with. And, you know, they've only got a point to overcome. It is really tight. I would like to see Arsenal win because I like Arteta. But then again, we've got to see Klopp go out on a high. But I think Arsenal for me. I think Arsenal.
Ooh. Well, Terry, you watched City play Palace at the weekend.
I did.
Do you think Jan's right in his assessment there? And look, you've seen City, they scored four past Palace.
They did, yes.
Do they look like they're going to retain the title?
A couple of things about that game from a City point of view was that Kevin De Bruyne went on a mad one, kind of like in the early part of that second half, which kind of won the game, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And against a team like Crystal Palace, that's clearly fine, whether or not that's going to be enough. But they're still in it, and they've got some really good players. And they can get the results, and if they just keep cracking on. I feel that perhaps Liverpool might crack. But what concerned me a little bit from a City point of view was that, yeah, so they had that kind of mad one for Kevin De Bruyne, who's just one guy. But also, like, towards the end of that game, like it was 4-2 in injury time, and it was City who were the ones sitting on the game. They were literally sitting on the ball because Palace got that late second goal, quite late. And at that point, City just, like, stopped playing, said, no, we're not taking any chances here. And Palace were able to sort of, like, get under their skin to a degree, which was, from a Palace perspective, was a bit of a micro win because you're thinking, well, actually, these guys should be swaggering over the line at this point. But in fact, they were quite nervous by the end of it, because I think that Palace had a really good go at them. I was very pleased with the way Crystal Palace played, as indeed were, I think, the fans. At halftime, they were applauded off the pitch, and they clearly went there to have a go. Now, obviously, as a consequence, they got beaten. It's easy. You're kind of mid-table. You're probably not going to get relegated. You're certainly not expected to win. It's a bit of a free hit, but we saw the best of Crystal Palace since Glasner has arrived at the club. in that time. It's just disappointing that we can't beat clubs like Forest and Bournemouth, which is what you actually want to do. So I would say that City and Liverpool look a little bit jaded, I think, at this point of the season. Whereas I feel that Arsenal, that result at Brighton was quite impressive. That's not a place to go and win. And they did it. That was quite impressive. I think that there's a very good chance that Arsenal will do it this time around, this year round. Like last year was more like a close call, almost like a run through. And this year, I think that they could do it. They look like they might be finishing the stronger this year. I think Liverpool could be exhausted. And I certainly think City could be exhausted because it's hard work winning stuff. And Arsenal, I think, have got perhaps the appetite and I think perhaps got the legs.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to go with Jan and suggest that it's looking like Arsenal for me.
It feels like the pressure is on Liverpool and Manchester City because they've got more going on, haven't they?
Mm.
So with City, while other clubs are having points deducted for profitability and sustainability reasons, the charges are hanging over City there. And of course, they won treble last season, so they've got to try and kind of move on from that. Liverpool with the whole Klopp thing going on as well, kind of an expectation that he can finish on a high there and the players can deliver for him. Whereas Arsenal, as you say, Terry, they've learned a very difficult lesson from last season. It seems quite clear that they have taken something from that and they're stronger for it. So I'm even more reassured in my belief now that they'll win it.
I think the addition of Rice has been fantastic, an amazing footballer, brilliant player, has gone in there. He plays like an Arsenal veteran. But the other player, of course, is Kai Havertz, who we've always said is a really good player.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no disgrace in turning up at Chelsea and not playing well. Actually, it's unusual for it to be the other way around, to be honest with you. So although it took him a bit of time to settle in, I think, for Arsenal, he seems to be coming good just at the kind of time of the season where you want a player like that to be coming good. If Arsenal get knocked out by Bayern in the Champions League, that will be disappointing, don't get me wrong, for them, but they won't suffer from it psychologically, I think. Losing to Bayern, getting knocked out of Bayern by Bayern in the Champions League, well, that happens. Okay, I think that there's a degree of expectation that are sitting on Liverpool and City's shoulders, and I think that these are the things that help. That little bit of extra mental uplift to just give you a little bit of extra strength in the legs and a bit of confidence in your heart. I think these things do matter in a really, really tight title race. So I think it does bode well for Arsenal. I wouldn't want to put any money on who was going to win the title, but I think it looks really good for Arsenal.
Odegaard as well on that one, who's just been, I mean, you've got to be in with a shout for a footballer of the year, really, hasn't he? Because he's just a different class, really is.
Yeah,
they've been a pleasure to watch, Arsenal, I hate to say, but they've been an absolute pleasure to watch and they're really effective.
Yeah, and since the start of the year, since they went out of the FA Cup to Liverpool, it's been pretty much relentless what this side has done. Probably the only surprise was actually losing to Porto, but that was an odd performance anyway. And I think a very unique refereeing performance in that was part of the reason for that. Not to say that he had a bad game or Arsenal didn't deserve to lose. They did. It was just the fact that it was a very, very, very pernickety game.
I'm not saying it was the referee, but it was definitely the referee.
It was definitely the referee. I think he made 32 fouls, I think, in that game. 32.
What do you mean you think? You know exactly.
Know exactly how many. God, I know exactly how many there were.
God, we're slagging off referees. We become a match of the day.
Yeah, I
think so. Slagging referees off.
No. If it was a match of the day, then we'd be dressing up, this isn't how I think football should be, with the referee got it wrong.
Yeah.
That's what they like to do on that particular show.
They always say what should be rather than what is.
Yes. Yeah, I think you're right. I think Liverpool seem to be the one that are on vibes at the moment. That first half against United yesterday, where they looked like they were bossing it, but just not killing United like they should have done. Yesterday should have been another 7-0, I think, from the way that it looked. 16 shots in the first half to none, and you end up drawing 2-2. You end up being 2-1 down to a couple of ridiculous goals. It was another one of the Premier League's just insane games. And United have had two of those in a week, haven't they, Jan? Because they had the Chelsea game in midweek. United have just become the insane team of the Premier League, just causing chaos everywhere. But Liverpool just didn't seem to have an answer for them, did they?
No, it was really strange that first half. You're right, because Liverpool were so dominant and created so many opportunities. And it was like there was a force field around the goal. I don't know whether they kind of just thought, well, look, we know we're playing well. it'll come, and didn't really have that nervousness because United was so open and were there to be, you're quite right, to be put to the sword. But it didn't happen. And, you know, they had a mad game against Liverpool in the Cup as well. That was a 4-3, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And of course, as you mentioned, they lost to Chelsea during the week in another crazy game where they were 3-2 up at one point, and it took the latest goal ever scored by Cole Palmer to finally finish them off 4-3. So, yeah, crazy. Really, really crazy. And another mad game yesterday, which is great to see. And of course, it had a massive impact on the title race as well, as we've said. So yeah, good entertainment, which is kind of what you want when you tune in. Too often, and we've said this before, you know, football can be awful to watch. I mean, I sat through most of the Old Farm Derby. That's like an afternoon I'm not getting back. and that's, a lot of games are like that. It's just the way it is, especially when there's a lot in it, there's a lot to play for. I mean, if this is the Manchester United we're now going to see, from now on, just having crazy games every other week, then they become acceptable to like, don't they? You kind of, it starts to become, well, they're my Premier League side because they're crazy.
Well, it's a business model, isn't it, Terry?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's suitable for a, you know, it's gone. So what we're going to buy here is we're going to buy all of Manchester United's problems, and then we're going to leave the Glazers completely off the hook so they can just keep money. Yeah, that is consistent with this whole idea of Manchester United at the moment. I assume at some point, like, reason will be restored to its throne. But I just like it because I think it's quite clear. Erik ten Hag, I don't think he knows what's going on. I just don't think he knows what's going on. One of my jobs is I run a sports channel, and I watch a lot of Ten Hag's press conferences. And he just sits there just like, we just have to, and he looks around and goes, and a lot of it is because English is not his first language, but also I don't think he knows what he needs to do. I don't think those guys are playing the kind of football that he wants to play. I don't want to be unkind because Ajax are a huge club, but I just think it's a different kind of challenge, an Eredivisie club, and also a club like Ajax, which I think probably does have a kind of, in terms of its player profile, is somewhat younger, more moldable. I think there's a specific culture at Ajax that is definitely not at Manchester United. And I am wondering whether or not maybe, you know, it's just that, it's not that he is a bad coach. It's just that I'm not sure how coachable those players really are. You talk about vibes. I mean, it's great to watch and fair play to them, but presumably at some point either he'll get it together or they'll get rid of him and the next person will get it together. And that'll be that. Maybe that'll be Xabi Alonso the year after next. Maybe that's what will happen.
Or maybe it'll be Pochettino. Just say, hey, bring your vibes from Chelsea and bring them up to here.
Pochettino needs a palate cleanser for a season. He can't go to another Premier League club after Chelsea. He's damaged goods after all of this. He needs to go away, go back to school for a little while, go to Dortmund or somewhere like that. Oh, no, actually, that's a terrible idea. Why have I just said that? That's just a ridiculous idea. He needs to go to a club that's well organised and is stable for a season or two.
You can't just bounce from PSG to Chelsea to Man United. You can't just have a career like that.
Well, I mean, he can, and he is. So from Tottenham to PSG to Chelsea, yeah, why not to Man United? What am I saying? Absolutely. The Poch line, the line of Poch. It's squiggly. It goes all over the place. You know, it could easily be a straight line, but no. The line of Poch.
Thomas Tuchel's made a career out of doing that very thing, hasn't he? So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
He'll be at Man United next.
But the weird thing is, I mean, like, Bayern could still win the Champions League and no one would be that surprised because it's Thomas Tuchel.
Yeah. No, it's true. It's true. It is true. It could easily just open up for them, really could. And that's just one of the crazy things about this season. What about next season? Who do you think is going to have a better season next season? Do you think Chelsea or United, Jan? Yeah.
Wow, that is a bloody hell, Grim. That was a question.
That wasn't on the running order, listeners.
That wasn't on the running order. We didn't even talk about that. What the hell do I know? I mean, they're both basket case clubs, and I think they'll continue being basket case clubs, and I think they'll probably both change their managers, and they'll both invest heavily, and this time next season, we'll be talking about them having crazy, mad, but ultimately disappointing seasons.
They should swap their managers. They should do a manager swap.
Oh, what? Do a whole Trevor Francis, Steve Bruce thing?
Yeah, that's it, yeah. And then they should swap their top strikers as well. like Palace and Birmingham did then, Andy Johnson for Clinton Morrison.
Worked out wonderfully, didn't it?
After a fashion, yeah. Worked out wonderfully for everyone else. But not necessarily for the club.
Of course, we don't know who's going to go down in the Premier League yet, because obviously there's still a lot of football to play, and maybe there's some more points to be deducted from team or given back. Just today, a further 2 points were taken off Everton, and now they just sit just 2 points above the drop zone. We've spoken about this this season, when Everton got that deduction, then got some points back, and when Forest got their deduction as well. And for the fact that they can appeal this and it might get jiggled about a bit more. So we're getting close to the end of the season now, and it's going to go right down to the wire before we find out, A, who's going to go down, and B, who's actually going to go down. It's turning into a bit of a joke down there, isn't it, Terry?
It is. And I mean, it is funny, but it's very, very serious, because relegation is awful and everybody hates it when their team is relegated. Well, you wouldn't know, Graham, but relegation is really fucking awful. And the idea that this could be determined by external forces, so by judgments and stuff like that, will make it all the more gut-wrenching, because you're just not going to know what's happening. And then you could get to the end of the season, you could survive, and then you could find actually you haven't survived because the team below you have been given some points back, or the team above you could be taken some points, or you could end up having some points taken away from you. And it's completely and utterly unsatisfactory. Do you know what, Graham? I think the best way of handling this is by everybody just like handing over big piles of cash, preferably in brown paper envelopes. Just do it the old-fashioned way. Do you know what I mean? The British way.
The British way, indeed.
Naked corruption, Graham.
Well, actually, it's interesting you say that, Terry, because the Premier League did actually sort of throw around a few ideas last week about trying to find solutions that don't include having points taken off and matters being solved in boardrooms when they could be solved on bank balances. That's the way the Premier League really likes to do business. Yeah, and they come up with this idea of luxury tax, which apparently is something that does quite well in America, in Major League Baseball and in basketball as well. So whereby the clubs have to pay fines, if you will, if they overspend. Just basically throw more money at it. It's a very, very Premier League solution, isn't it?
Yes, incredibly. It's crazy. What a crazy, crazy, mad idea. Dreamt up by a load of crazy mad people. Clearly they're spooked by what's happened this season. We've seen that in the lack of any real transfer activity, especially in the January window. The worry is, especially with, as I mentioned earlier, with what potentially could happen to City. If Everton and Forest have been deducted fairly, you know, large numbers of points, which is imperiling the season, as you've mentioned, God knows what's going to happen to Manchester City. So the boys at the top, or near the top, or the boys just in it anyway, they're all making loads of money anyway, aren't they? But they've got wealthy backers, but it's because all of these rules relate to turnover, and obviously they've got to compete in the transfer market and the wages that come along with that as well. You know, they've come up with this great idea whereby you're going to take points off us for overspending, so we don't want you to do that. When we overspend, we want you to fine us, so we're overspending even more, which is just mad. Don't take points off us, fine us, because the benefactors will pay for that. It's absolutely crazy. You're right. If we could have sat down in the pub and drank 10 pints each and come up with a solution that the Premier League would have come up with, that's exactly what it would have looked like. Because, I suspect, Graham, that's exactly what they did.
Yes. 10 pints of Bollinger, please. Come on, Terry, you're laughing. You come up with a better idea.
You owe my idea. It's 50 plus one. But nobody wants to hear that, because that's just like boring and sensible. And as we have just discussed, there's not necessarily a guarantee that everyone will get things right. I don't know what the solution is in this country. I genuinely don't know what is the correct solution in this country. There's a thing in this country. We always think that we're not a corrupt country, and we really are. Like, you might not be aware of this, but off topic, away from football, some guy gave the Conservative Party millions of pounds as a donation, and the Conservative Prime Minister gave that guy a knighthood. That's kind of how it works, but that is just naked corruption. We have, in this country, we do this kind of thing, like they do in a lot of other countries. So if maybe that is the correct solution. It's like, unless you are going to bring in proper regulated football clubs with very, very clear governance structures and with very clear ownership structures, then the other way is just to turn it into the Wild West. Mm. Well, not the Wild West, because obviously that would probably mean club chairmen shooting each other, which I don't know, that's not a bad idea. Mm. But really just like, yeah, make it about the money. If you can't settle this on the grass, then settle it in the bank. Just like, you know, everyone just swap Revolut cards and, you know, just ping each other cash and just like say, you know, well, sorry, I massively overspent and got a load of ringers in to keep us up. Here's a couple of million quid to soften the blow as you get relegated. If all that money was going into solidarity payments, into grassroots, then that might be something to think about. But something tells me that's not where the money's going to go. And maybe that's the question to ask. Mm. If we're going to do that, where is the money going to go? In whose account will it rest? Jan knows.
I think that the sweetener on this, which is what they were trying to satiate lefties like us, is by saying that any fines would go to clubs that were struggling. So that's a nice way of getting people to stand behind it. But the reality is that you can't have clubs spending beyond their means. I believe that, because we've seen what happens when they try and keep up and they can't. And clubs have gone to the wall or go into administration is a best case scenario, really. So I think taking points off clubs is absolutely the right thing to do. I think it's the only meaningful way of punishing bad behaviour and poor stewardship. There may need to be a conversation about what the rules are and, you know, do we make certain exceptions for clubs that are clearly very, very rich, but they don't turn over a lot of money? That's something for the bigwigs, I think, probably to think about. But certainly you've got to hit them where it hurts, and fining somebody who can easily afford the fine, it's meaningless. So take the points off them and their titles, especially the 2014 League Cup final. That's all I'm saying.
Yes.
Now listeners. we get to the heart of it.
Finally. Of course, there's going to be plenty of great games to watch this weekend, including Liverpool versus Palace. I put that in the box set.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did. And do you know why? Because I want to see what all the fuss is about Oliver Glasner. And I thought it would be quite good to see him up against Liverpool, see if Liverpool really are just running on vibes and whether or not he can cause an upset up there. What do you think there, Terry?
I think that there is a remote possibility that this is the week where Liverpool blow it. We've talked about this before, right?
Yeah.
There's that game that when you lose a title, and you'll have it yourself, right? Yeah, last season, there's that game. Mm. What was that game when you thought, oh, well, fuck this, guys? What is it? What is that? And this could be the game. Mm. Like, you know, free hit for Palace, blasting the ball. They're just getting their shit together. And Liverpool, yeah, bit vibey, bit wobbly. We have gone there and got a result before under similar-ish circumstances. So it could be Cristanbul 2. You never know. Cristanbul 2, the Cristanbulling.
And on Friday night, Plymouth, who are teetering on the relegation zone in the Championship, up against Leicester. Leicester getting their promotion push back on track, or will they fall foul down on the south coast?
Plymouth are in real danger of being dragged in. They've got to win the weekend, so that does help them out. But they're only a couple of points away from Birmingham, who are third bottom, so it's perilous for them. But they are home to Leicester. Leicester was only one of the top three to win at the weekend, and they've got a game in hand as well, so it's there for Leicester to blow really now, I think.
Oh yeah, it's a squeaky bum time, isn't it? If you want to see what games we put in our box set this weekend, then get along to sofpodcast.com, click on the link for the weekend box set, and subscribe to our email newsletter, and it will be in your inbox on Friday lunchtime. But that is all we have time for this week. We've now got to calm down and look forward to the great games, the great European quarterfinals that are going to fill up our week. Yes, everyone can enjoy Arsenal versus Bayern this week while I hide behind the sofa. And enjoy your Schadenfreude popcorn. So lovely, salty, also very, very sweet. But for now, from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Bilton, and from Terry DeVillain, it's goodbye.
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 We are at Sound of Football on X, Blue Sky, and Instagram, so feel free to get in touch there or head to our website, sofpodcast.com. Don't forget to rate and review us. We should market Schadenfreude popcorn, by the way.
Or Schadenfreude flavouring.
Yeah.
You could put it on your chips as well if you wanted to.
Oh, yeah. Schadenfreude spiced chips.
What would be in a Schadenfreude dressing? Not a dressing, a shake. What would it be? Salt, obviously. Lots of salt.
For me, it'd be kind of Marmite-y because Marmite is just the most amazing flavour on it. So an umami.
It's got to be quite tangy, isn't it?
Yeah, and then just like chuck a load of sodium and monosodium glutamate or something like that.
Oh, yeah,
just
standard. Sort of like, just standard.
So you can just giggle along like a twat for 90 minutes, eating your Schadenfreude chips.
And buying more and more and more and more.
Yeah. Yeah, that should definitely be illegal in the European Union.
Yeah, but we'll be able to eat it here, though.
Yeah. We'll smuggle it over. Shove it in the false exhaust pipe of a camper van. Well, that's my retirement sorted.